All right, Matt, welcome to Crow 777 Radio. This is hour one of episode 659. Jason Lindgren is with me and Wayne McCroy returns. Wayne's got a new book called The Enoch Polarity, which is available now. We'll have him tell you where you can get it. We're basically going to jump in with the Cross of Henday, which we've talked before. Jay Widener was here talking about it in 417. You can use the episode search on the website to see all the episodes Wayne's been in. Anyhow, welcome, Jason.
And a rather cool good morning.
Welcome, Wayne. And why don't you, right out of the gate, tell folks where they can acquire your new book.
Hi, guys. Thanks again for having me on. Always appreciated. The new book is called The Enoch Polarity and the End of Time. It's available now pretty much anywhere where you would buy books. Go to Amazon is probably the primary place you'll find it, or you could order it through any of the other book retailers. And I also have links available to it directly on my website, www.alchemicaltechrevolution.com. Thanks again for having me on. It's been a while and we need to catch up on some things.
Yeah, thanks for showing up. And let's just set the stage here, Wayne. We were talking about a few things which could easily preface what we're going to talk about. Well, we were getting ready to do this and the mic was not hot. Rose mentioned the idea that deep state people like CIA or other alphabet agencies after World War II went looking for Falconelli, who wrote the book Mysteries of the Cathedrals. And everyone has a perception about what that's about. But in my view, it's simple. Falconelli was pointing out things about an energy grid that existed in a time when we, the people, everywhere benefited from it. A time when cathedrals were actually healing your organs, when bells were ringing in resonance with a world grid system, and all these little nodes like cathedrals and other things that were built were right on the living systems of the world. It was beneficial. This is the system that had to come down for places like the Catholic Church to begin to create the new world, the new control system. Jason and I talked about covering that kind of woke-ish movie from HBO or series called American Gods. In that, they literally line up where they want to go with this all the way to the brain chip. But what they further do is they show the grid. They show you, if you have an eye to see it, how the control is put together. If we go back to Downard and we look at the geomancy, where people are doing in things in places where, say, a lot of people were killed, that's a power center. There is a resonance. There is an energy. There is a tappable reality that exists, which is why it is done. To get back to the Falconelli thing, they went looking for him because they couldn't have a person informing everybody how to re-resonate above the low resonation they're pushing us in now. When the digital money comes and all these other things, the world will be in an ultra low vibrational state. But what's more, nobody, next to nobody, will be able to figure out what's true anymore. This is why we have the internet. This is why we got the internet. We got the internet so that they could begin to collect data on everybody everywhere at levels that were previously impossible. They did it to train AI, which would end up being the brain center, the police force, the early warning system, if you want, of everyone everywhere. It was always intended for that. In 1999, an executive from Sun Microsystems informed us all, you got these cool new tools. Guess what? Free email, free this, free that. But guess what else? You no longer have privacy. 1999, he said that, and nobody believed him. He told the truth. They were already scraping the data. When you send an email out back in the day, I'm not sure exactly how it works now, but when I was trained up on how the internet worked, you would send, it would break into packets that would go in 100 different directions. The first one that arrived would be the delivery stream, but that data had been scattered across God knows how many places. Do you see what I'm talking about here? Those of us who remember the old world assumed there was privacy, which wasn't there. We just assumed it. And even when people told us there is no privacy, we couldn't believe that it was possible that we could not have privacy anymore. To get back to the main point, when you look at things like the Bible is a good example, and I'm not knocking it, and I think it's one of the most important things we have in our possession for those who want to spiritually advance. but it came through the Catholic Church, what you have in your hand. And if you think it wasn't manipulated in ways that benefit their control system, you're sadly mistaken. And the way we think now, as a result of all these control systems that have been put in, is, in my estimation, the average person sees about a third of what's real in the world. And a way to illustrate that is the old tried and true and real philosophical breakdown of everything, body, spirit, and soul. What most people think about, reason with, realize, and see with their eyes is the body. They're missing two-thirds of everything else that's here, which is represented by the spirit and the soul, and truly where most spiritual advancement must take place. And it's hidden for a good reason. A single person that resonates at a highest level is a danger to the people installing the new control grid worldwide, which will bring our frequencies down. One person, because they will influence the people around them. And when people who are at a little higher level see them, they will be drawn to them. And that's why Falconelli was searched out, in my view. But I'll get off the soapbox. And you want to add anything to that, Wayne?
Yeah, certainly what you're talking about is Falconelli was pointing back to the old analog systems that connect us to the etheric portion of this reality. This is much of the crux of what this new book that I put out is about. I identify an archetype that I call the Enoch polarity therein. And what this is essentially, it's the etheric building blocks that lead to the culmination of manifestation in the physical world here. And it's a missing portion of what people associate with things happening in the world. And of course, the control structure that's in place right now, what they most assuredly want to do is they want to replace this connection to the etheric with a cheap synthetic knockoff of the etheric, a synthetic layer. This is the digital realm. They want to digitize everything. It's all about transferring analog to digital because that gives them a type of shortcut into controlling manifestation in the physical here. They're bypassing the natural system. This is what Falconelli was pointing out. The old analog systems that are in place that connect us to this energetic field or resonance field, if you want to call it that, the next vibratory rate up in the spiritual ladder of things called the etheric. And this is something that has been lost to us in the modern era. And of course, this ties into the cycles of time going through the various systems as well. I like to always seem to point out the Rosicrucian view on this because it gives us probably, I think, the best descriptive type of a way, a framework of looking at these different cycles of time and these different layers of manifestation and how it all operates. So essentially, this etheric principle is the primary thing that I think we need to really focus heavily on in the future. And I think this is what Falconelli was preserving, this whole analog view of this etheric. And we only have little bits and pieces and fragments of that connection to the etheric left. A lot of times they call them ley lines or things like that. This whole notion of geomancy, it's a real thing. There are real energetic fields and forces in place, and different places or areas on this world have a more, I guess you could say, heavier presence of the etheric therein, for lack of better terms. Sometimes it's hard to really find the right language to describe these things.
A resonance.
A resonance. That's probably the best way to view it, because it is. It's all about frequency, vibration. It's about that next octave step up into the new time to come, this new age that is at the precipice of happening right now. And what's going on is these powers that be in this world, in order to maintain their own grip on power, they're trying to usurp that new age and turn it into something that is a more physical paradigm, the hyper-physical paradigm, the eighth sphere, as Rudolf Steiner calls it. That's essentially what they're attempting to build. And it's an artificial system, a synthetic version, a Fugazi knockoff of what the real etheric field is. So they're trying to build that, get that in place, and circumvent the real analog etheric field that all things in nature manifest through. And they're trying to completely overwrite the whole system here in this place we call Earth. So I know that's a lot, and we could go a lot of different directions with that.
Didn't James Shelby Downard state the reality and importance of ley lines?
he took it a step further than that. He attached it to the onset of telephone lines. So not only did he show the occulted things that we were just talking about, but he showed the leveraging of it as the first communication systems came in. What they call it? Bell systems. The bells were used for something totally different way back in the day. And to further illustrate it using things that have supposedly happened in the modern time, let's look at what's his name's island? What's the scumbag?
Jeffrey Epstein.
Epstein Island. If you think that's a worship temple, well, maybe it is, but what it actually is, it's a nodal point. And the architecture and the blue stripes and all that are functioning. But what did they do there? They replaced truth and free will and all these things with shame, a very low vibrational control system through blackmail and shame and other things. And it does give them real control over the people who have been caught in that resonance. And it does give them the ability to reprogram to some degree the individuals who have been lowered into that resonance. And how did they do it? They did it with the most pure among us, children. Do you see? This stuff is not make-believe. It's just that we've only ever been taught to see the body, the physical, the 3D. Here's a rock, I can throw it. That's how we think about this world, and it leaves us two-thirds blind, minimally two-thirds blind. And when you're two-thirds blind, the last thing you'll probably ever think about is to truly raise your spiritual realities is a vibration, is a resonance, is an inner work, not a body work, not a 3D manifested work. It's more closely attached with decisions you make and attitudes you adopt and the emotions you portray in the world and the act we all put on. To what degree are we acting who we are? Everybody knows it's true. There used to be a pun, you're three people. You're who everyone else thinks you are. You're who you think you are. And then you're who you really are, which is a very illustrative point. But Wayne, let's jump in. We've kind of set a stage here that points in the direction where most of us are blind. Let's jump into the Cross of Hende.
All right. In the kingdom of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. Remember that.
Right. And what are the gospels, right? Two of them are synoptic. What does that mean? Seeing with one eye. That's another allusion to the third eye. And the third eye does not need the two physical eyes to see with.
No, it offers us a glimpse into the spiritual. And I suspect in the very near future, as certain things begin to happen and become closer here, we're going to see some very strange things unfolding on the world stage and the world around us. And we're going to begin to experience more of this spiritual type sensation that has been lost to humanity for a very long time. Because it's all about this next octave in the vibratory level that's going to be going on here. And those powers that be in this world are trying their very best to usurp this because they've garnered some better understanding of the machinations of how to use the etheric to build things in this world that will lock us into this physical paradigm. And that is most certainly what they're attempting to do. But we need to keep a clear view on this. So where I go with this in the book is speaking on this, we always wind up for some reason at this monument that's called the Great Cross at Hende. It's a central symbol to all of these things going on. And I think Folconelli pointed this out to us for a very important reason. And that's why we keep circling back to that. I know that for some reason, this is something that's resonated with me for years. And I've been trying my best to break down the symbology and the archetypes present on that monument for quite a long time now. And I think I finally have hit upon a couple of the pieces of the puzzle that were missing prior to this. And this is one of the reasons why finishing this book has taken me so long, because I started actually writing it about a year ago, but it wasn't until just recent months that all the pieces began to really fall in place. So this is a central symbol that we need to look at to understand this Enoch polarity, as I like to call it. Maybe there's different names for this stuff. I don't know. I'm the type of person, when I find something, I try to apply a name to it to give the concept some type of a life. Because this is an important concept as well in the old alchemical ways of thinking. If you can give something a name, well, then that kind of solidifies it as an idea. So that's what my purpose is for doing that. And maybe there's other people who have discovered this and have talked about this in the past and maybe call it something else. I don't know. I haven't found that yet, but I find all of these very similar things to be aligned with this. And of course, a lot of this is born out in this monument called the Great Cross at Henday.
Wayne, is it known who constructed it?
No, they really don't know who built it, but Folconelli has disclosed that he thinks it had to be somebody with a great amount of knowledge of the old alchemical principles and things of that nature. So it's somebody who is well-versed in this stuff.
So it makes the initial assumption that the mainstream has made that at the top portion of the cross, there's a mistake, which you rightly point out in the book. You know, call it a mistake if you want, but it's intentionally there. So are we even looking at this correctly when we open up by saying, yeah, it's a pretty cool thing, but there's a mistake at the top?
Well, that mistake was put there on purpose. And of course, this is the way the alchemists always have worked. They have to encode what they're putting in there so that only if you have the right cipher for translation can you truly understand what it says. And this is one of the important precepts on this cross at Henday, because that's one of the main things that really stands out to people when they go searching at this. They find that on the front of the cross, the translation that has largely been attributed to what it says there is, "Hail, O cross, the only hope," which makes a lot of sense when you understand like what it is that is encoded on that cross, because this talks about what Folconelli terms as a double cataclysm, which is coming, which infers that it's not only going to have a physical manifestation here, but there's a spiritual side to it. And this is the important thing. This is connecting the physical to the spiritual. And that connection point between the physical and the spiritual is the etheric. So that's what I've taken away from a lot of this.
So what is the text and what is the mistake, Wayne? What is the thing referred to as a mistake? You gave the definition, but not the source.
Right. I can't really pronounce what it says and what it's written, but they have one of the letters is offset. It seems like it's carried over, like it's written in like two different lines, like one on top of the other. And where they have the break, where the word should break, it breaks in the middle of the word. So it's a purposeful mistake that most people would probably put off as to, okay, well, the stonemason or whoever carved this into there didn't realize as he was writing the sentence there that he would have run out of space at that point on the monument. So he just continued on the next line. And it's kind of like a run-on where the words is separated in the middle of the word. So they've noticed this mistake, but if you look at the craftsmanship of the rest of the cross, to assume that it was a mistake of that nature is a misnomer. This had to have been done on purpose. And of course, this is put there to either obfuscate or to encode something else. And one other translation of this sentence, "Hail, O cross, the only hope," infers from Folconelli himself that there is some type of a location or an ark of safety from this coming cataclysm. And that's what has been largely translated by those who've looked at it. Now, Jay Widener and Vincent Bridges did a great job on all of this, and I owe a lot of my understanding to what's on there to them. But I think they misapplied certain symbols that were put on this cross in certain ways and tried to align it to some other type of an idea they already had in mind with this and relating it back to 2012, as is the Mayan calendar's end and stuff like that. So whether or not they were totally correct or incorrect on this stuff remains to be seen. But certainly the world didn't end in 2012, did it? Or at least not in a way where we could recognize that.
Not by our calendar, but we know the calendar's wrong. But I got to ask, so most people are familiar with the idea of NRI, I-N-R-I on top of the cross. Does that play into the cross of Henday?
Yes, it most certainly does. That's one of the important things. That's right there on the front inscription there too. And of course, this, when you go back and you translate that INRI, there's a couple different interpretations that have been given to this. And of course, Jay Widener and Vincent Bridges offer several different interpretations of this. But based upon how Folconelli has presented this, I would stick with the Rosicrucian point of view on this, because that's the primary point of view that Folconelli analyzes this stuff with. So the Rosicrucian translation of this would be "Igne natura renovatur integra," which means through fire, nature is renewed whole. And this, of course, is implying that there is this type of a double cataclysm that's coming. And of course, this will be, as I describe it earlier in the book, a flood of fire or a fire flood. And this type of fire is something totally different than what has been present here in the past. And I would relate it more closely, probably to something that would be better understood in our modern scientific paradigm as a type of plasma or a superheated gas of some sort. That's how I view it in the physical way of thinking. But of course, it implies all sorts of etheric ideology as well. And that's primarily what I've focused on. What is this going to look like in the etheric? Might look very different to our physical five senses here than what's really occurring in the etheric. And one place where we could look at this type of a designation of things for an understanding is look at the book of Revelation. This is given from the perspective of John the Revelator. And what he's actually describing and viewing are things that are happening in the spiritual realms, not here in physical reality. And many Bible interpreters today will take some of those scriptures and interpret them literally. Are there going to be literally locusts running around the earth devouring men and hurting men and stuff like that? Will they be giant locusts and things like that? I don't think that's what it's really going to look like in the physical five senses way. What he's describing are things happening in the spiritual. And this is where people often miss the mark. So this is telling us in no uncertain terms, this is what's going to happen. But if you're expecting that to look like this in your physical five senses 3D world in which you're used to, I think you're missing the mark. And this is, of course, applied in this way of thinking too. So I hope I'm not losing anybody on this point of view with this, because what's being described here is a lot of things that are going to occur within the etheric, and I don't know what they'll look like in the physical sense. I could make speculations, but that's about it.
Let's offer what Robert Taylor brought to the table in The Devil's Pulpit, first volume, the better of the two volumes from my point of view. They're both worth a read. But to me, the first edition, the first volume of Devil's Pulpit, that's just standard reading for anyone who has an interest in spiritual matters. He claimed, I'm not going to give his backstory. He had access to a book. The only other copy of that book went to the king and the top guys of the country. He uncovered that in the secret society, there were only three dudes who knew the truth. That was the king and his two boys. Everyone else in the organization was being lied to. That's the first thing. He said that the INRI at the top of the cross, that secret organization used it as a password. And each of the letters, if I remember correctly, I hope I remember correctly, is the name of an angel, which is kind of interesting because we know what the secret society is doing. They're low vibing everyone with these low vibrational control systems. It's what they've been doing. But angels, if you go back into the Rosicrucian teachings, Steiner and others, and what Fulcanelli drew from, he refers to them as fire beings, which further underscores what Wayne just laid down about things happening in the etheric. The idea is delineated in what I've covered before. From here to the moon is one realm that NASA will tell you is an orbit of the moon. And the secret societies, way back before they were trying to control the world to the level they are now, it was a realm of angels. Now, beyond that, from the moon to the next body, and this gets really confusing because the Rosicrucians swear up and down in no uncertain terms that the words for Venus and Mercury were switched by alchemists way back in the day because the knowledge was so dangerous. If someone misused it, they could do real harm. Whatever you want to do with that information, it makes everything very confusing, but they swear that that happened. And they swear that anything you read that has Venus and Mercury in it beyond a certain date has been swapped. But from the moon to the next body, Mercury or Venus, that's going to be the archangels. Then beyond that, up to the orbit, as NASA would call it, before the sun or the other planet, Mercury or Venus, would be the archai. If I further remember correctly, those are fire beings. But I think maybe all the angels are. But I just wanted to lay all that down, Wayne, because that's drawn basically from the same knowledge base.
Yeah, and you could definitely see some of the crossovers in many of the things that are interpreted and represented here. So we have this different way of thinking about this physical realm in which we live here. When you look at it from the spiritual connotations, we can see that there were these different designations in place for what they do call orbits now, wherein certain spiritual beings reside. Well, the etheric is the connection between these different spiritual worlds and this earth in which we live and we reside and we have our physical being. So the etheric is the important portion because it's the connecting point. It's the nexus between worlds. It's the doorway, and causing a type of an effect in the etheric will lead to an effect not only in the earthly plane here or the physical below, but it'll also affect that which is above or beyond in the spiritual realms. It's the connecting point, the doorway, the gateway, the stargate, if you will. And we see a lot of emphasis in modern times here, especially recent months, applied to the term stargate and the things that it's been attached to, most notably the artificial intelligence initiative. And this has everything to do with building this synthetic etheric layer that I've been talking about here. It's this digital realm, this digital sublayer of this reality through which they want to try to usurp the natural analog systems that are in place in our natural reality. So they want to try and circumvent this etheric manifestation and port it over through the digital layer to bring things to manifestation in the physical, attaching the physical into its own separate type of sphere of influence or its own type of world of sorts. It's referred to by the old Hermeticists as the world of shells. And like I alluded to earlier, Rudolf Steiner calls this concept the eighth sphere. And of course, in order to better understand this notion of the eighth sphere, you have to have a clear understanding of the Rosicrucian cosmo conception, which talks about these different evolutionary processes through which we supposedly go, that ourselves as human beings or entities, as well as these different worlds in which we manifest, the structure of evolution that they go through. And of course, we're sitting in the period right now where we're just slightly past what they call the Earth revolution of the Earth period in the Rosicrucian. So we're supposed to be on the ascendant, going back towards having more interaction with the spiritual realms, because the Earth sphere, this Earth revolution of the Earth period, as they describe, is the lowest most level of this. It's dense physicality, brings us into this dense physicality, separates us completely from our spiritual senses. Well, on the ascendant version of that, where we'll be stepping back up, we're going to have greater connection with the etheric portion thereof. And they call this the Jupiter revolution. So we're approaching that time now. And these things kind of all overlap over the course of time. It's not just one quick boom. All of a sudden, it's a quick transition from one thing to the next. It's a very slow process where this occurs, and things begin to overlap and coalesce together at certain points. And I think that's where we're at right now in the cycle of time, where we're going to be more cognizant of things going on in the spiritual, things going on in the etheric. Now, I don't know if we described this on air, but off air, before we went live here, I began to break this down in the terms that Rosicrucians use. They view the etheric portion of this reality, the etheric plane, as a sublayer of the physical world in which we live. They call this the dense chemical region of physicality. That's what we're used to. That's the world that we experience through our five senses. Now, the etheric is a finer portion of this. It's a less dense portion of this. And we're only now beginning to see the first steps upward into the etheric. And they describe this in these terms. Now, the Rosicrucians say there are seven states or phases of matter. Now, in our modern paradigm, we accept solid, liquid, and gas. And now, more recently, within the past century or so, they've began to recognize plasma as the fourth state of matter. Well, the Rosicrucians say there's seven states. The bottom three, solid, liquid, and gas, are the physical paradigm that we're familiar with. Now, anything above that begins to step into gradations of the etheric layer. So we're at the precipice where we're seeing our first gradation into the etheric layer in our understandings of things. And of course, anybody who works in the black budget community or special access programs community will tell you that one of the things they heavily focus on is plasma technologies. And this is why, because this is the key. It's the gateway between worlds. It's the holy grail, essentially, of what it is they're looking for as far as advanced propulsion field technologies and things like this. And this all ties back to field theory as well. They all interconnect. It's a spiritual science. That's the thing they don't want to get out, because you have to acknowledge the spiritual side of things in order to understand how these things effectively work. And what they've done is they've indoctrinated the bulk of humanity to accept only the physical paradigm of things. They've tied us into this hyper-materialist way of thinking, wherein everything could be explained away as some physical cause and effect sequence. And that's not the case. There's a spiritual sequence of cause and effect that happens. Things step down from the spiritual into the physical, and the etheric portion of this reality is that gateway into which these things become manifest.
Let's drop the Rosicrucians to make a point here. In the Rosicrucian, the very old Rosicrucian teachings, they would say things like anything that happens in the physical world is a spiritual reality that's already occurred. And that is the entirety of the point of view. I mean, simmer on that for a minute.
Well, even Rudolf Steiner describes this. And this is something that came to my attention in just the past couple of months here, when I was actually more heavily researching and delving into this way of thinking. I found that Steiner had a lot of this stuff kind of figured out in different ways that I hadn't perceived before when I began to really go through some of his lectures. He points out that through his alleged clairvoyant abilities and the spiritual sciences he was able to use, he was able to ascertain that certain things happened in the spiritual realms at certain times, and these later began to manifest here in the physical many years later as a result of the things that happened in the spiritual. And of course, if you go back and you look at Steiner's lectures, you'll begin to understand what I'm talking about. He talks about sometime in the 1840s up until the year 1881, he claims that there was a battle that happened between the Archangel Michael and the dragon in the spiritual realms, and this later manifests physically as the events of World War I here in the physical. So this pointed out another facet of this whole etheric manifestation thing to me that I hadn't previously considered. There's a time delay between those things that happen in the etheric and those things that happen in the physical. And that is one of the reasons why things will often look different to you in this physical world of the five senses than what they've been described to be in the spiritual. So when we look at John the Revelator in the book of Revelation, he's describing this stuff happening in the spiritual. Well, it's probably not going to look a thing like you think it's going to look when it does come to pass here in this world. And maybe some of these things are coming to pass or have come to pass already. I don't know. I don't have all the answers. But it's this way of thinking that has led me to a deeper understanding of the importance of this etheric nature of things. And this is wherein I think a monumental shift in our future sciences can occur, is if we begin to acknowledge field theory and begin to acknowledge these etheric sciences, these spiritual sciences, more readily into the integrity of the overall scientific method. And if we're able to do that and combine these things, this world could be transformed very quickly.
Well, dark matter seems to be putting a low vibrational spin on the idea of ether, hence etheric, what you've been referring to. But to try to put a framework around ether, which is not easy, particularly using the way we look at things, just the material point of view. There was originally a elemental table, the table of elements, where ether was zero. So what that basically tells you, it's lighter than hydrogen on just a physical view of it. But the idea was that it permeates everything. Now we're being told by hypermaterial science, scientism, that dark matter is the majority of space and all these other things they make up. But look at movies like the Marvel movies. What did they show ether to be? This nasty substance that can get into you and do harm. And the dark elves are trying to remove all light from the world and the universe with it. It's this negative aspect of what Wayne's talking about. But really, Wayne, in my view, the hypermaterialism science has capped what we can do, our abilities. And until we tear down that wall and quit drawing a line at hypermaterialism, if it can't be weighed or measured, it doesn't exist, we're not going to advance. But I think there are plenty of underground places that have already bridged that gap.
And I agree with your assessment there. And this is exactly what I'm pointing out. This is what the Enoch polarity is. you've expressed that they've used this notion of dark matter. That is the black cube building block of the Enoch polarity. You see, the Enoch polarity breaks down into white cubes and black cubes. The good side, the bad side, the dark side, the light side. And primarily, they've weaponized the dark side against us. So they're trying to keep us focused in this hyper-materialist paradigm by lacking the acknowledgement of the etheric. And they tried pushing this whole idea out of modern science way back with the Michelson-Morley experiment, where they said there's no such thing as the ether. And they haven't really disproved the ether. In fact, a lot of the sciences leading up until that time were modeled on this ether theory, or field theory, if you want to call it that. So we have these different ways of thinking about science. And this is what's essentially been weaponized against us and what we've been locked out from by these special access programs and these secret sciences that occur in different places around the world. It's all about these etheric building blocks that they are able to utilize in certain ways. And I think this is truly the reality of what it is they're looking for at places like CERN. They're looking for the etheric manifestation of a thing. They're not looking for a smaller and smaller and smaller particle. It has nothing to do with particles in the physical sense in which we would think of them. It's something finer. It's something less dense. It's this reaching into this etheric portion, this spiritual portion of manifestation of reality. It all has to do with something that the old sciences referred to as the keynote. And this, I think, is what they're trying to unlock at places like CERN. They're trying to grab hold of these etheric building blocks in order to further be able to control manifestation in the physical here.
When you go through the front door, Wayne, at CERN, what do you know immediately? They don't have the brick wall between body, spirit, and soul. Who is it, Shiva? Or they have one of the yes. spiritual statues there. And when you break that down and quit being afraid because your pastor told you those were demons and devils, and you open up your mind to realize that other human beings, if you want to be spiritual, God made those human beings, had a different way of describing things long before the era of Christ. What you're looking at is another tertiary, like the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, an earlier representation of that. Point is, when you get there, they're not doing hypermaterialism there. They've got the sign on their front door, Shiva. And so when you go outside these days and you see all these things flying in the air, which are so common, they don't appear to make noise. They don't appear to have jet engines or props or anything else. Looks to me like they figured out how lighter than air travel works. And to me, Wayne, that's because they crossed the boundary of body only.
Right. And plasma is the gateway into that. And that's why it's such an important development in many of these new technologies that are emerging. And of course, you probably won't hear a lot about that because a lot of this is locked down in special access programs. And that's the true nature of what many of these programs are about. They're trying to reach into these other spiritual worlds. And they talk about this openly with the advent of quantum computers and things like that as well. It's about trying to extract resources from what they would term as other realities or other worlds. Well, essentially, what is this? This is from the spiritual realms. They're trying to take control or hijack the process of manifestation in this reality, this physical 3D, five senses world that we experience, to build this eighth sphere or this world of shells, as the Hermeticists describe it. And this is a world that is devoid of spirit or soul of any kind, and it pretty much is only a physical type of a nature of being. And it will be populated by automatons that are empowered by dark spiritual entities. And I know this may be a bridge too far for some people to consider, but I've put these dots together in the new book as well. There are spiritual powers, negative ones, that are having some influences here in this world, and they really want to take this whole process unto themselves in order that they can manifest physically and essentially usurp their lot in where it is that they belong.
Steiner wrote about it 100 years ago, Wayne. He informed us that their pandemic was a scam, that the masks that they were supposed to wear, like we did harm. But he further went forward and talked about the inoculations and said there would be a point in the future when those inoculations were used to kill the spiritual spark within human beings So not only would they not search for the divine, they wouldn't even recognize it's a possibility. That was told us 100 years ago. And don't get me wrong, Steiner was an insider. He was also part of a secret society. When I try to talk to someone like Fortune about that, he immediately has a bias that he tells me that they caused the problem. And if you go back and read that Steiner, they're admitting to the problem without admitting. What they're saying is, my bosses told me to come out and tell all you unclean masses these secrets, because if we don't, something bad might happen in the future. Well, I got news for you, Steiner. All those years of you hoarding important secrets did lead to something bad. You know what it's called, Mr. Steiner? 2026. So you can see what's happened. My point being, over 100 years ago, what Wayne is referencing was laid down in the open.
Yeah, and just to add to that, in my point of view, I think Steiner, as he experienced more and more of the things going on, I think he came to the realization that some of the things that were happening were bad, and he really thought he was being helpful, and I think he intended to be helpful in releasing some of this information.
Probably,
that's just my point of view. So
he states flat out in at least two things that I've read that his superiors told him it was time because something bad might happen.
Yeah, he acknowledged that the time was right for the release of this information. So I don't know. I mean, you could speculate all day long as to what the intentions are, but he was clearly part of the problem. And I think he outright acknowledged that to some degree or another.
And which secret society was he a part of?
Rosicrucian.
Yeah, he was part of numerous ones. He was a Rosicrucian. He was also a theosophist, and he formed Anthroposophy as well. So he even had his own organization. But he had some disagreements with a lot of the theosophical views on things and saw some of the flaws in the ideologies and recognized that there was something not so on the up and up there. And I think that's why he separated from that and began to maybe let some of this stuff out. I think there are those that have good intentions involved in some of these things as well. And some of the information they put out is good. But as always, you do have to use your sense of discernment with a lot of it, because they all have their biases. And Steiner was no different.
It seems to me that way back over 100 years ago, that there were tons of people like you're describing. They could tap the Akashic record. Well, how does a human being get access to something like that and not recognize how important compassion and love are to all beings? You know, can that be done? I don't buy that it can be done. If you're going to have access to these spiritual levels, how can it be that you don't know these things? But in the same way, our schooling, our medicine, so many things were edited and taken over in the early 1900s. I think the secret societies are that on spades. And by the time we get up to the 60s and people like Crowley are coming around, back in the day, it was not open worship of Crowley. It was hidden. But this is the world's evilest man was the moniker they gave him. And now he's like the hero of every rock band that ever was. And again, I think we're seeing the fall, the takeover somewhere around the early 1900s of the secret societies as well. Not that they weren't already infiltrated, but I mean the wholesale flipping of control. Best guess.
Yeah, you see that a lot with the timeline of things. I would push that back to the early to mid 1800s is when most of that began to kick off, where you saw that takeover of the dark side of the secret societies primarily during that time. And of course, they put forward a lot of this information as kind of a karmic principle for themselves. That's another aspect of this you have to look at. I mean, there's so many different ways to go at this, but essentially, I find the Rosicrucian models that they give in a lot of these teachings to be extremely helpful and useful, because it does give us an accurate representation of how things seem to work. And not only that, it's the most attuned to our Western senses here. Now, there's a lot of Eastern traditions that we don't quite resonate with here in the West. And I know, Crow, you've looked extensively at a lot of the Eastern traditions and are familiar with many of their systems, but they just don't seem to hit the same as those of us who were born and raised in Western culture here. This is the Western stream of alchemical thought or esotericism that comes forward through the Rosicrucians. And it seems to be one of the best modeled systems that they give that gives us definitive terms to describe these things. And all the different secret society groups describe the same things, just with different words.
And they match Tycho Brahe's so-called solar system. That's another thing I like. And I agree with you. I think that information is more than valid. And I think it's important for us to quit judging so readily and just look at the information for what it is. And if nothing else, what you're looking at is what these people accepted to be correct. But when I start cross-referencing with Brahe, who I already accept, and I see them using almost verbatim the same model, it impresses me a little bit more, I guess.
Yeah, and essentially, like, this is what's been laid down. And I think this is probably the best descriptive system that we have right now to understand some of these things. So if you look at the Rosicrucian system, this breaks down essentially what we're looking at here as to where we are in the timeline of things and what we could expect here in the near future, as well as what it is that's been weaponized against us. And that's the most important thing, because many of these people who've attained positions of power in this world know about many of these old concepts, and they've utilized them and weaponized them and leveraged them against us. So just recognizing that going on is a huge step forward for the masses. And I think we're seeing a lot more people become more receptive to these ways of thinking than what it had been in the past.
So Wayne, we're coming into the top of the hour. Do you want to touch on the four symbols before we break for hour two?
All right. Well, maybe we could just break down a little bit of the symbols on the monument itself before we proceed beyond that. So the cross itself, the cross of Hendaye, what it looks like is it's got a cubic pedestal. And on that pedestal, there's a pole or a pillar, if you want to use that term. And then on top of the pillar sits the cross section of the Great Cross at Hendaye. And on that cross section, we have, of course, the INRI that we discussed before and the other phrase that was carved on there with the alleged mistake on it, which essentially alludes to a place of safety against the coming fiery cataclysm, which INRI on there designates as coming when you look at it from the Rosicrucian system. Now, on this pedestal, this base, this cubic base, there are four symbols, one on each side of the base, starting with the one in the front. And the one in the front has been the most mysterious one for those people who were analyzing this. And they've come at it from all different perspectives. And some of the people who have contributed the most to this, of course, are Jay Widener and Vincent Bridges, the late Vincent Bridges. And they seem to ascribe this to the center of the galaxy as to what this symbol on the front of the monument represents. Now, this symbol on the front of the monument is an eight-pointed star. And there's a lot of different traditional things that go with the eight-pointed star. Some would say that it is representing Venus, or some would say it could represent Sirius, which is another thing altogether.
And Jupiter.
Could represent Jupiter. It represents a lot of different things. What I found that it represents is not only does it represent in Freemasonry something they call the blazing star, but it also represents the star of Bethlehem that's encoded in the Bible as well, this eight-pointed star. And when you attach the connotation of Venus or Sirius to it, this is also a symbol, Venus or Sirius. Either one of those is interchangeably a symbol for the sun behind the sun. The source sun, if you want to use that way of thinking. And of course, the Masons, of course, will recognize Sirius, the dog star, as being the source sun in some of their ideologies. But this is pointing out something entirely different. So anyway, at any rate, just to reiterate what has been said here about this, Jay Widener and Vincent Bridges somehow ascribe this symbol to referring to the center portion of our galaxy and the alignment of the Earth with the center of the galaxy. And of course, they're referencing back to some of these models that we have from NASA and other places.
Do you accept that, Wayne? Do you accept that speculation?
I don't think it's correct. I think what they were looking at, and they made this interpretation of it based upon information they had available to them at the time. And I don't think it was a correct assessment in light of things that I have learned recently.
So we should probably inform folks of why, because I'm of a similar mind. Not that what I think makes me any more right, because it certainly does not. It's not like we're stating facts here. The problem that I have with such things is you're referencing a NASA model. And as people who followed me know, I don't accept what NASA's done, and everything they have done has been part of the control grid to get you to think about things in an improper way, to include where it is we exist. And if you're going to accept things like these old models and like what Tycho Brahe said, going to the center of a so-called galaxy becomes problematic. Because if you're going to accept that, you're talking about a thing that's how many hundreds of thousands of light years away. Just basically you're accepting a model from a place called NASA. And I can't do that.
Okay, right. So another thing, just to point out, aside from the whole NASA paradigm and everything, I think, in my view, I think Widener and Bridges attempted to try too hard, okay, to apply this physical paradigm way of thinking that our modern science has to what's represented on the cross at Henday. They weren't thinking outside the box. They were thinking in the strictly physical paradigm, and that's what we need to step away from when we're thinking more in terms of the etheric. So what's the etheric representation of this eight-pointed star? In the Rosicrucian system, this eight-pointed star symbolizes the union of the spiritual and material realms through the alchemical process known as solve et coagula, or dissolution and rejoining. It also represents, of course, in Freemasonry, the law of the circle and the square, the unification of the subjective with the objective, or the union of opposites. And in the systems of the Christian mystics, this represents resurrection or new beginnings. So what we're talking about is we're talking about this union of the subjective with the objective. And I think Bridges and Widener were focused too heavily on the objective rather than the subjective. So this is telling me, this is pointing back to something occurring within the etheric. And I think in hour two, we'll point out what exactly that is, that this star on the front of the monument represents. But just to get through the other symbols on the monument, now, there's been a lot of debate by those who've studied this as to which order to look at these things in. And there are some who have interpreted it going around the monument clockwise and some going around the monument counterclockwise as to the order in which these symbols should be interpreted. Now, Fulcanelli advises us, and I would like to stick with Fulcanelli's interpretation because he's probably the best source for all of this for understanding it. He advised us to go counterclockwise around the monument to interpret the symbols. And many of these symbols actually also pinpoint one-to-one different symbols in the tarot, in the major arcana of the tarot. So that being the case, when you go around this monument counterclockwise, the next one you come to would be the moon. There's a symbol of the moon, and it's a very stylized moon. And I know we're short on time, so I don't want to necessarily go to all the details of this right now.
We'll cover it on the other side, each one of them. So
right. Then after that, you'll find a symbol of the sun, and it's an angry looking sun on the western side of the monument. And then lastly, you find this symbol that has, it's a circle with a cross through the middle of it, and they're divided into four sections. And there's a stylized letter A in each section of this circle, of this monogram on this side of the cross. And this has a lot of different implications to it as well, and is pointing to many things in the astrological significance of things. So all of these symbols are encoded on this monument, and each one has its distinctive meanings, which we'll get into in hour two, and we could point the way forward and circle back around, of course, to that eight-pointed star, because in my view, this is the most important symbol on the monument for pointing out what it is we're looking at and what we can expect.
All right. We're going to have to wrap up very quickly, Wayne. Tell folks where they can find your book, which is available now.
I can be found at www.alchemicaltechrevolution.com. And right on the homepage there, the landing page, you'll see a link to go buy the new book if you're interested in doing so. It's called The Enoch Polarity and the End of Time. Thanks again, gentlemen, for having me on. Always a pleasure.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back for hour two. We're going to pick up. But I want to say before we go, Mr. Widener is viewed by many as an authority, and he's put probably a lifetime of learning into so much of this. So I don't want anyone to think we're disparaging his work. That is absolutely not the intention here. He is clearly recognized as an expert at what he does, for lack of better terms. Anyhow, hour one is free to everybody at crow777radio.com. That is crow777radio.com. Members know to log in to get access to everything. They get access to Shoot the Moon, which is the two-hour film covering my older telescope work. They get access to all the solar imagery. They get access to my current solar work, which is in member-only clips available on the site. They get access to my still photography of the sun, and they print many of them large, like 50 inches. Many people have printed huge versions. They're beautiful. Anyhow, we're going to take a short break, and we will be back to pick up where we left off. I'd like to wish you all a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. There it is, man. Cheers.
Belief is the enemy of knowing.